Chapter 55. Pitt dropped out of the exit shaft and hit the corridor at a dead run. He twisted the handle and threw open the door to the cell that housed Giordino and Gunn with such a force that he nearly tore it from the hinges. The tiny room was empty. The noise betrayed him. A guard rushed around the corner from a side passage and stared at Pitt in astonishment. That split-second hesitation cost him. Even as he was lifting the barrel of his weapon, the baseball bat caught him on the side of the head. Pitt had grabbed the unfortunate guard around the waist and was dragging him into a convenient cell before he hit the floor. Pitt threw him on a bed and looked down into the face of the young Russian who had escorted him to Velikov's study. The boy was breathing normally, and Pitt figured the damage was no more than a concussion. "You're lucky, kid. I never shoot anyone under the age of 21. Quintana was just coming out of the exit shaft as Pitt locked the guard in the cell and took off running again. He did not bother to be careful of concealing his presence. He would have welcomed the chance to bash the head of another guard. He reached the door to Jesse's cell and kicked it open. She was missing too. Dread swept through him like a wave. He plunged on through the corridors until he came to room 6. There was nothing inside but the stench of torture. Dread was replaced by cold, ungovernable rage. Pitt became someone else, a man without conscience or moral code, no longer in control of his emotions, a man for whom danger was merely a force to be ignored. Fear of dying had totally ceased to exist. Quintana hurried up to Pitt and clutched his arm. "Damn you, get back to the beach! You know the orders!" He got no further. Pitt shoved the stubby barrel of the AK-74 into Quintana's gut and slowly pushed him back and against a wall. Quintana had stood face to face with death many times before this moment, but staring at the ice-cold expression on the craggy face, seeing the pure look of murderous indifference in the green eyes, he knew he had one foot in a coffin. Pitt did not speak. He pulled back the gun, raised the baseball bat to his shoulder, and pushed his way through Quintana's men. Suddenly, he halted in his tracks and turned back. "The elevator is this way," he said quietly. Quintana motioned his men to follow. Pitt took a fast head count. There were 25, including himself. He hurried toward the elevator that rose to the upper levels. No more guards appeared in their way. The passages were deserted. With the prisoners dead, Pitt reasoned, Velikov probably saw no purpose in stationing more than one guard in the lower storage area. They reached the elevator, and he was about to push the up button when the motors began to hum. He motioned everyone against the wall. They waited, listening to the elevator stop at a level above, hearing a murmur of voices and soft laughter. They stood frozen and watched the interior light shine through the crack between the doors as it descended. It was all over in 10 seconds. The doors opened, and 2 technicians in white coats stepped outside and died without the slightest whisper of a sound from knives thrust into their hearts. Pitt was amazed at the efficiency of the act. None of the Cubans wore the slightest expression of remorse in their eyes. "Decision time," said Pitt. "The elevator can hold only 10 men. "Only 14 minutes until the space shuttle lands," Quintana said urgently. "We've got to find and cut off the compound's power source. There are 4 levels above us. Velikov's study is on the top. So are the living quarters. Take your pick of the other 3. "Like drawing to an inside straight." "What else?" Pitt said quickly. "We're also bunched up fish in a barrel. My advice is to split up into 3 groups and take each level. You'll cover more territory faster." "Sounds good," Quintana hastily agreed. "We've come this far without a greeting. They won't be expecting visitors to pop up on the inside at the same time in different areas. I'll go with the 1st 8 men to level 2 and send the elevator down for the next team, who will hit level 3 and so on." "Fair enough." Quintana wasted no time arguing. He hurriedly selected 8 men and ordered them into the elevator with Pitt. Just before the doors closed, he snapped, "You stay alive, damn you!" The ride up seemed endless. None of the men looked into the eyes of the others. A few dabbed at the sweat trickling down their faces. Some scratched at imagined itches. All had a finger poised on a trigger. At last the elevator settled to a stop and the door parted. The Cubans poured out into an operations room staffed by nearly 20 Soviet GRU officers and 4 women who were also in uniform. Most died behind their desks in a hail of gunfire, dying in dazed disbelief. In a few seconds, the office resembled a charnel house with blood and tissue sprayed everywhere. Pitt took no time to see more. He punched the level one button on the panel and rose alone in the elevator to Velikov's study. Pressing his back against the front wall, weapon in the raised position, he stole one quick glance around the opening doors. The sight inside the study struck him with a mixed force of elation and savage anger. 7 GRU officers were sitting in a semicircle, watching in rapt fascination as Foss Gly performed his sadistic act. They seemed oblivious to the muted thump of gunfire from the level below, their senses deadened, Pitt concluded, by the emptied contents of several wine bottles. Rudy Gunn lay off to one side, his face nearly battered into pulp, trying desperately out of some burning pride to hold up his head in contempt. One officer held a small automatic pistol on a bleeding Al Giardino who was tied in a metal chair. The brawny little Italian sagged forward with his head almost on his knees, shaking it slowly from side to side as if to clear his vision and rid himself of the pain. One of the men lifted his leg and kicked Giardino in the side, knocking him and the chair sideways to the floor. Raymond LeBaron sat beside and slightly behind Gly. The once dynamic financier had the look of a man who was worn to a shadow, his spirit torn from his body. The eyes were sightless, the face expressionless. Gly had pressured and twisted him into a decaying vegetable. Jessie LeBaron knelt in the center of the room, staring at Gly in defiance. Her hair had been crudely lopped short. She clutched a blanket around her shoulders. Ugly red welts and dark bruises covered her exposed legs and arms. She looked to be beyond suffering, her mind deadened to any further pain. Despite her pitiful appearance, she was incredibly beautiful, with a serenity and poise that were remarkable. Foss and the other men turned at the arrival of the elevator, but seeing that it was apparently empty, they turned back to their sport. Just as the doors began to close, Pitt stepped into the room with an almost inhuman icy calm, his AK-74 held at eye level, the muzzle erupting fire. His first carefully aimed shots took the man who had kicked Giardino onto the floor. The second blast struck the chest of the bemedaled officer seated next to Gunn, pitching him backward into a bookcase. The third and fourth bursts swept away 3 men sitting in a tight group. He was swinging the gun barrel in an arc, lining up on Foss Gly, but the massively built turncoat reacted more quickly than the others. Gly yanked Jessie to her feet and held her in front of him as a shield. Pitt delayed just long enough for the 7th Russian, who was sitting almost at his elbow, to unholster an automatic pistol and snap off a wild shot. The bullet struck the breech of Pitt's gun, shattered it, and then ricocheted into the ceiling. Pitt raised the useless weapon and sprang at the same moment when he saw the muzzle flash from the second shot. Everything seemed to slow down, even the frightened expression on the Russian's face as he squeezed the trigger for the third time, but the blast never came. The frame of the AK-74 sliced the air and caved the side of his head in. At first, Pitt thought the second bullet had missed, but then he felt the blood dripping down his neck from the nick taken out of his left ear. He stood there rooted, his fury still burning as Gly rudely shoved Jessie sprawling on the carpet. A satanic grin spread across Gly's evil face along with an expression of unholy expectation. "You came back. Very perceptive, for a cretin, that is." "I promised you would die slowly when we met again," said Gly menacingly. "Have you forgotten?" "No, I didn't forget," said Pitt. "I even remembered to bring a big club." Pitt had no doubts that Gly meant to crush the life out of him with his massive hands. And he knew that his only real advantage, besides the bat, was a total lack of fear. Gly was used to seeing his victims helpless and naked, intimidated by his brute strength. Pitt's lips matched the satanic grin, and he began to stalk Gly, observing with cold satisfaction the look of confusion in his opponent's eyes. Pitt went into a baseball crouch and swung the bat, aiming for a low pitch, and struck Gly in the knee. The blow smashed Gly's kneecap, and he grunted in pain but didn't go down. He recovered in the blink of an eye and lurched at Pitt, receiving a blow in the ribs that knocked the breath from his body with an agonized gasp. For a moment he stood still, warily watching Pitt, feeling the broken ribs, sucking painful intakes of air. Pitt stepped back and lowered the bat. "Does the name Brian Shaw do anything for you?" he asked calmly. The twisted look of hate slowly changed to puzzlement. "The British agent? You knew him?" 6 months ago, I saved his life on a tugboat in the St. Lawrence River. Remember? You were crushing him to death when I came up from behind and brained you with a wrench. Pitt relished the savage glare in Gly's eyes. That was you? A final thought to take with you, Pitt said, smiling fiendishly. The confession of a dead man. There was no contempt, no insolence in Gly's voice, just simple belief. Without another word, the two men began circling each other like a pair of wolves, Pitt with the bat raised, Gly dragging his injured leg. An eerie quiet settled over the room. Gunn struggled through a sea of pain to reach the fallen automatic pistol, but Gly caught the movement out of the corner of one eye and kicked the gun aside. Still tied to the chair, Giordino struggled weakly against his bonds in helpless frustration, while Jesse lay rigid, staring in morbid fascination. Pitt took a step forward and was in the act of swinging when one foot slipped in the blood of a slain Russian. The bat should have caught Gly on the side of his head, but the arc was thrown off by 6 inches. On reflex, Gly threw up his arm and absorbed the impact with king-size biceps. The wooden shaft quivered in Pitt's hands as if he had struck it against a car bumper. Gly lashed out with his free hand, grabbed the end of the bat, and heaved like a weightlifter. Pitt gripped the handle for dear life as he was lifted into the air like a small child and slung halfway across the room against a wall of bookshelves, where he crashed to the floor amid an avalanche of leather-bound volumes. Sadly, despairingly, Jesse and the others knew Pitt could never shake off the jarring collision with the wall. Even Gly relaxed and took his time about approaching the body on the floor, triumph fairly glowing on his gargoyle face, lips spread in sharkish anticipation of the extermination to come. Then Gly stopped and stared incredulous as Pitt rose up from under a mountain of books like a quarterback who has been sacked, dazed, and slightly disoriented, but ready for the next play. What Pitt knew, and no one else realized, was that the books had cushioned his impact. He hurt like hell, but suffered no crippling damage to flesh and bone. Lifting the bat, he moved to meet the advancing Iron Man, and rammed the blunt end with all his strength into the sneering face. But he misjudged the giant's unholy strength. Gly sidestepped and met the bat with his fist, knocking it aside and taking advantage of Pitt's forward momentum to clench iron arms around his back. Pitt twisted violently and brought his knee up into Gly's groin, a savage blow that would have doubled over any other man. But not Gly. He gave a slight gasp, blinked, and then increased the pressure in a vicious bear hug that would crush the life out of Pitt. Gly stared unblinking into Pitt's eyes from a distance of 4 inches. There wasn't the slightest display of physical exertion on his face. The only expression was the sneer that was locked in place. He lifted Pitt from his feet and kept squeezing, anticipating the contorted terror that would spread across his victim's face just before the end. The air was choked off from Pitt's lungs and he gasped for breath. The room began to blur as the pain inside his chest ruptured into flaming agony. He could hear Jesse screaming, Giordino shouting something, but he couldn't distinguish the words. Through the pain, his mind remained curiously sharp and clear. He refused to accept death and coldly devised a simple way to cheat it. One arm was free, while the other, the one still clutching the baseball bat, was caught in Gly's relentless grip. The black curtain was beginning to drop over his eyes for the last time, and he realized death was only seconds away when he performed his last desperate act. He brought up his hand until it was even with Gly's face and thrust the full length of the thumb into one eye, driving inward through the skull and twisting deeply into the brain. Shock wiped the sneer off Gly's face, the shock of atrocious pain and unbelief. The dark features contorted in an anguished mask, and he instinctively released his arms from around Pitt and threw his hands up to his eye, filling the air with a horrible scream. In spite of the terrible injury, Gly remained on his feet, thrashing around the room like a crazed animal. Pitt could not believe the monster was still alive. He almost believed Gly was indestructible, until a deafening roar drowned the agonized cries. Once, twice, three times, calmly and quite coldly, Jesse pulled the trigger on the fallen automatic pistol and shot Foss Gly in the groin. The shells thudded into him, and he staggered backward a few steps, then stood grotesquely for a few moments as if held by puppet strings. Finally, he collapsed and crashed to the floor like a falling tree. The one eye was still open, black and as evil in death as it had been in life.